Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast is adapted from my YouTube channel, and this episode is part of my Vault series, where I'm turning my back catalogue into podcasts. So, if I ever reference photos or things on screen, please remember that these episodes were originally made for video. Also, if research or references seem out of date, please bear in mind as well that some of these episodes were recorded as far back as 2016. I just want to make sure that all of my content is available on podcast as well for you to enjoy. If you wish to find me on YouTube, I am just Georgia Marie over there, and with all my disclaimers out of the way, enjoy the episode. The murder of Matthew Shepard brought attention to failures in hate crime legislation at both the state and federal levels, and as a result, President Obama signed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crime Prevention Act into law. This is Matthew's legacy. His senseless murder has led to millions of people just being that little bit safer in their everyday lives. Let me tell you his story whilst I try not to get too emotional about it. There's just something about this case that really hits me, and I really always try not to be emotional when I'm talking about these cases, but Matthew's case just, it hits me. Matthew was born on December 1st, 1976, to Judy and Dennis Shepherd in Casper, Wyoming. He lived there for the entirety of his childhood before moving with his family to Saudi Arabia in his junior year of high school, where his dad got a new job in the oil industry. However, seeing as there were no American high schools in Saudi Arabia at the time, he actually finished his schooling at the American school in Switzerland, where he worked as a peer counsellor. When it was time for college, he eventually decides to move back to his home state of Wyoming, where he studied political science, foreign relations, and languages at the University of Wyoming in Laramie. Matt developed an interest in politics at an early age, and he wanted to use this passion to help people. The MatthewShepherd.org website, set up by those who knew him best, describes him as easy to talk to. He made friends easily, and he actively fought for the acceptance of all people. Being openly gay and knowing the struggles that came along with that, Matt had a passion for equality, and he wanted everyone to be treated the same, no matter who they were or how they identified. He was always that person to stand up for somebody else. For example, he made friends with a homeless man one day. He would talk to anyone, and from there on, he would take this homeless man to lunch once a week, even though he was a student and probably didn't have loads of money spare to do so. But he did it anyway. That's just the kind of person that Matt was. But that's not to say that Matt didn't face his own fair share of difficulties growing up. He was picked on and teased at school because of how small he was and for his overall lack of athleticism, and he found the coming out process pretty difficult. His mother Judy later said that she'd known all along and she accepted that he was gay, although Matt's friends suggest that it was more of an understanding and education process for his parents. Matt was actually more scared to tell his father though than his mother. He built up this scenario in his head, going over it again and again and again, and in the end, it wasn't that big a deal. Matt's family never showed any anger or hate towards him. They educated themselves, and he had a family who loved and accepted him for who he was. Judy said to Vanity Fair, "As a parent of a gay child, you feel a profound sense of loss that they're not going to continue traditional family life. The daughter-in-law, the big wedding, but long before he told us, we'd already gone through that process. We felt he was our son and we loved him, and you don't give that up because your life is not what you thought it was going to be." The hardest period of Matthew's life came during his senior year of high school, which he was attending in Switzerland. Him and three friends decided to go to Morocco for a break, and one night Matthew heads to a local coffee house alone as he couldn't sleep. On his walk home, a gang of local men approached him and raped him 6 times. Judy said that he was never the same after Morocco. Although the police really did try to catch the perpetrators, they never succeeded. Matthew moved to Saudi Arabia again to be with his family, and he began to suffer badly with depression and anxiety. He would have nightmares about the incident, and he did attend therapy, but it changed him for the worse. He started to overcompensate for his fears by acting recklessly, drinking too much, and occasionally doing drugs. He would meet random strangers and get into difficult situations with them. When it came to dating as a whole, Matt was cautious and scared, worried about being hurt. But despite all of these personal problems, he would always be the one to help another person in need. Every person who knew him says that this is a thing that stood out about him. I'm not just saying that because it's the dumb thing to say nice things about people who have passed. Genuinely, in all of my research on this case, Matt's kindness and his fight for equality is the number one thing that stands out. Despite the fact that he was a perpetual victim throughout most of his life, he had a very difficult life. And that says a lot about a person. It was October 6th, 1998, when things began to go really wrong for Matt. Matt had met up with his friends at the weekly LGBT meeting at the university, where they were working on plans for the campus's upcoming Gay Awareness Week, due to start on the following Monday. After the meeting, the group heads to the local village inn, and Matt attempts to persuade them to accompany him to Fireside Lounge for a drink, but no one was feeling it. One of the group members drove Matthew home and watched him walk inside, but he clearly had other ideas because he ends up going to the Fireside Inn alone, arriving there at approximately 10:30 p.m. He has a drink at the bar, he chats away to the bartender, and eventually he leaves alongside two other men. He wouldn't be seen again for 18 hours when a mountain biker called Aaron Kreifels was cycling in a remote area in the Sherman Hills development just east of Laramie. Aaron falls off his bike and in doing so notices what he originally thought was a scarecrow slumped along a buck rail fence. Aaron soon realises that it's not a scarecrow at all, it's a human, and a human in a very bad way at that. He'd been tied to the fence, his hands tethered behind him, and he was slumped forward, sort of laying as close to the ground as he could. As this was 1998, Aaron didn't have a mobile phone, so he runs to a nearby house to call the authorities, and policewoman Reggie Flutie is the first one to respond to the scene, along with medical technicians. She would later report that she mistook Matt to be a lot younger than he was. He was only 5'2" and very boyish in stature. She originally thought that he was a child. At this point, although he'd been tied to the fence for 18 hours through the night and in near freezing temperatures, he was alive, although barely. Matt's breaths were few and far between, but there was still hope. His face was covered in blood, apart from streaks where his tears had been. Flutie attempts to open his mouth to clear his airway, but it was clamped shut. As she attempts to revive him, she's saying to him, "Baby boy, I'm here, kiddo, you're going to be okay." Matthew is transported 65 miles away to Poudre Valley Hospital in Fort Collins, Colorado, where he is immediately admitted to the intensive care unit. He was originally taken to the nearby Ivanson Memorial Hospital in Laramie, but they simply didn't have the facilities to deal with such severe injuries. He arrives at Poudre Valley at 9:15 p.m. on October 7th in critical condition. He's put on full life support and remains in a coma for several days, clinging on to life. His injuries were severe and doctors were unable to operate as he simply wasn't strong enough and there was nothing they could do. He'd suffered multiple fractures to the back of his head and in front of his right ear. His head, face and neck were covered in lacerations and abrasions.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words "Jesus saves" written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
His head was so badly injured that he'd suffered severe brain damage to his brainstem, which obviously affects all of your body's vital functions. The doctors knew there was nothing they could do but wait. Even if Matt did regain consciousness, nobody was sure if his brain injuries would be too severe for his body to function. Matt's parents are informed of the attack and they have to make their way to Wyoming from Saudi Arabia. They arrive at Matt's bedside at 7 p.m. on October 9th, almost 48 hours after he was discovered. I'm sure it took some time for him to be identified and his parents informed, but I can't imagine the pain of having to do such a long and tedious journey to arrive at your son's bedside, knowing the extent of his injuries. Nobody thought he was going to live for much longer. Matt's family strongly requested no interviews with the media and requested that their privacy was respected whilst they held vigil at his bedside, although they did issue a statement to the public. It's a very long statement and I'll probably end up crying if I read it, so I'm not going to read it all. I'll leave it in the description box if you do want to have a read. I'll just read for you this one excerpt, which says, Matthew's life has often been a struggle in one way or another. He was born prematurely and he struggled to survive as an infant. He is physically short in stature, but we believe he is a giant when it comes to respecting the worth of others. We know that he thinks if he can make one person's life better in this world, then he has succeeded. This is a measure of success which Matthew has always pursued. The reason the family felt the need to make this public statement was because Matthew's case had blown up. Whilst the family were travelling, the story of the attack had been reported by the local media, then regional, then national. By the time his parents reached the airport, Matthew was a headline of every single newspaper. The national media made it a part of Matthew's story that he was gay. It was a fact mentioned about him in every single article. But it wasn't so much at the forefront, it was mostly just stated as fact, which although the Western world was becoming more and more open to and accepting of homosexuality, it was still a very big thing for homosexuality to be spoken about on a national level as nothing negative. Matt was spoken about as being a kind boy, the person to always help others. He had loving parents, he spoke three languages, he travelled the world. His boyish looks and small stature meant that people felt for him and people read the articles and could relate Matt to their sons, brothers, grandsons. The main photo used of him in the media was of him posing in a sweater, blonde hair in his face, looking directly into the camera. He looked adorable, angelic. And how dare people attack him so brutally for just being gay, this adorable young boy. Language and photos used by the media goes a huge way in deciding how the general public are going to feel about any story. It's easy to subtly sway people to the positive or the negative. People felt Matt's story on a personal level. He could have been their son or their grandson. And the whole country followed with bated breath. Candlelight vigils were held worldwide for Matt. His name was on everyone's lips. Crowds formed outside the hospital waiting for the news that he'd woken up from his coma. Even President Bill Clinton called the hospital to send his best wishes to Judy and Dennis, although at first they refused to entertain him. They didn't want their son's assault to become a political pawn. But everything is political. And eventually they did take the call from Clinton, which they said helped them immeasurably. Clinton was warm and kind to them, and he was shocked when they actually told him that Matt had campaigned for him twice. People across the country were disgusted, and letters, emails, and cards poured in for the family. Judy said that half the letters were from people in the straight community expressing their disbelief that anything like this could happen in their country. Dennis Shepherd told the Coloradoan, "We were totally ignorant of the amount of discrimination that was being dealt to the gay community. We just assumed that Matt would just be a citizen with the same equal rights his straight brother had." But the problem with equality and tolerance is that you often surround yourself with like-minded people. It's very easy to live in a liberal, tolerant bubble because you and your friends, anyone you would happily associate with, would never consider committing a hate crime against somebody because of their sexuality, race, gender, or anything else. It's very easy to forget there are people out there in the world who are full of anger, hatred, and fear of anyone different. And sadly, there are a lot of people out there who live their life in hatred and fear and would commit a hate crime against somebody just for being different. Whilst Matt was laying in his hospital bed on life support, the police were out there doing their job. And their job proved to be a lot easier than anyone expected. Not long after midnight, about an hour after investigators believed Matt was assaulted, two teenagers called Emiliano Morales and Jeremy Herrera were walking to Laramie Park when two men suddenly appear. The two men start swearing and talking smack to the boys. Then Emiliano gets hit in the head. Jeremy notices that one of these two men had a gun, and so they hit this man with a stick before escaping the situation. Emiliano required 21 staples to repair his scalp. It was a pretty bad injury. And of course, the police show up at the scene, and as they do so, the two men run away, leaving their truck at the scene. These men were 22-year-old Aaron McKinney and 21-year-old Russell Henderson. The police search the truck and find Matthew's credit card and his shoes, and they also find a 357 Magnum covered in blood. They don't make any immediate connection to Matt here because, of course, he wouldn't be discovered for another 16-ish hours. But it does mean that when Matt is admitted to hospital all those hours later, the police don't have to do much investigating to find their suspects. They already know who they're looking for. But Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson both returned home to their girlfriends, Kristen Price and Chastity Pasley, respectively, and they start to get their alibis in order, coordinating a version of events to give to the police. Kristen took Aaron to the hospital where he was admitted with a hairline fracture to his skull caused by the night's violence, and they all decide to dispose of the evidence, driving 50 miles to Cheyenne to dispose of any bloody clothes. But they actually hide Russell's bloody shoes in a storage shed at Chastity's mother's house for some weird reason. It doesn't take long before all four, Aaron, Russell, Kristen and Chastity, were all arrested. Aaron and Russell for attempted murder and the girlfriends for being accessories after the fact. When Kristen was interviewed, she said that Aaron had come home covered in blood, apparently crying and throwing up. He said, "I've done something horrible, I deserve to die." Another report says that he'd simply told her, "Well, you know how I feel about gays." The story of what happened that night slowly begins to come out. Aaron and Russell had met Matthew in the Fireside Lounge. They come up with a plan, they're going to pretend they're gay so they can rob him and take his money. So the three leave together and Matt gets in their truck under the impression that they're going to go back to one of their homes. Aaron confessed that during the car ride, Matt put his hand on his leg, to which Aaron told him, "Guess what? We're not gay and we're going to jack you up." Matt hands over his wallet with just $20 in it and they beat him anyway. They drive out of the town to Sherman Hills down a dirt road to an abandoned area. There, Russell ties Matt's hands together behind his back and then ties this to the fence. Aaron removes Matt's shoes, thinking that this would slow his walk to town if he managed to escape. They continue to beat him, knowing that they can't leave him alive because he'd seen their license plate number. He's ferociously pistol whipped with the same gun that was later found in the truck until he fell unconscious, and then they just left him there. Matt was hit in the head 18 times and was found bruises on the back of his hands, showing that he'd attempted to protect himself at first. There was also a huge amount of bruising around his groin, indicating that he'd been kicked there repeatedly. Henderson and McKinney assumed he was dead when they left him. It was unfathomable that he would still be clinging to life when he was found 18 hours later. But sadly, Matt never regained consciousness. He remained on full life support in intensive care until 6 days after the attack. At midnight on Monday, October 12th, Matt's blood pressure began to drop, and his family, who had not left his bedside in almost a week, were notified. At 12:53 a.m, Matthew Shepherd died from his injuries.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words "Jesus saves" written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
The Shepherds were in the process of having to decide whether or not to continue life support for their son, and they expressed how grateful they were that they did not have to be the ones to make that decision. In the end, Matt decided. As a statement released after his death said, he was caring to the end and removed guilt or stress from the family. Matt's funeral took place on the 16th of October 1998 in the family's hometown of Casper, Wyoming. It had been attended by Matt's friends and family and the horrifying Westboro Baptist Church. The now dead Fred Phelps turned up with his flock, including children, and protested Matt's funeral. They held placards daubed with homophobic slurs and rejoiced in front of mourners that a gay man was now burning in hell. There are a few things in the world that make me as angry as the Westboro Baptist Church. Imagine being part of Matt's family and seeing such hatred, such joy at your son's death. The saddest thing is that they'd preempted this hatred as well. While so much of the country was saddened by Matt's story, so many people thought it was the right thing. Amongst the lovely, caring messages, the Shepherd family received a vitriol of hate, of support for his murderers. A SWAT team stood outside the service, guns pointed at every entrance, and it had to be swept for bombs before anyone was allowed inside. As a result of Matthew's death, the attempted murder charges for Henderson and McKinney are upgraded to first-degree murder, meaning that the two were now eligible for the death penalty. At a pre-trial hearing, it was testified that McKinney and Henderson had decided to rob Matt and pretend to be gay to lure him out to the truck. McKinney had attacked Matt after Matt put his hand on his knee. In April 1999, Russell Henderson pleaded guilty to kidnap and murder, avoiding a trial in doing so, but also escaping a possible death penalty. He had accepted a plea deal just 2 days before the opening arguments were due to take place for his trial. He's sentenced to 2 consecutive life sentences, and the judge said the killing was part because of Matt's lifestyle, part for a $20 robbery. Henderson said in a statement that McKinney was the mastermind behind the kidnapping, that it was his idea to take him out and rob him, but Henderson disagreed with this. Disagreed with it so much that he still went ahead and did it though. Henderson was the one to tie Matt to the fence, but only apparently on the instruction of McKinney. At one point, when Matt looked really bad, Henderson told McKinney to stop beating him, only to get hit himself above the mouth in return. Henderson's lawyer denied that this was ever a hate crime, that Matt was not targeted because he was gay. According to their statement, it started in the truck when McKinney pulled out a gun and demanded Matt's wallet. The whole sentencing basically seemed to be that Henderson was a victim of McKinney himself. He apparently never wanted any of this. He was a good person. He just got caught up in it. In his final comments, the judge said, "You are not a victim here, Mr. Henderson. You are a perpetrator. The court does not believe you feel any true remorse in this matter." As Henderson was being sentenced, Westboro Baptist Church stood outside once again. But this time, people were prepared and were not willing to let the Westboro Baptist Church steal the limelight once again. The University of Wyoming's LGBT Association had an idea to block the protest using big angel wings. And that's exactly what they did. Wearing outfits made of white sheets, duct tape, and PVC piping, they stood directly in front of the Phelps family and raised their wings. I've got goosebumps just thinking about it. This became known as the Angel Action, and it was replicated in 2016 when Westboro once again turned up to protest outside of the Pulse nightclub in Orlando after the shootings. McKinney's trial was a lot more painful for the Shepherd family. It took place in October and November 1999. This trial wasn't so much an argument as to whether McKinney was responsible for the death or not. He was responsible for it. The defense's entire argument in court was designed to bring a prison term rather than the death sentence. It was to argue how responsible was McKinney really. In the opening arguments, the defense conceded that McKinney was indeed responsible for Matt's death, but that his past had led him to make poor choices in life. He suffered with drug and alcohol abuse, had been using large amounts of methamphetamine in the days before, and had been drinking heavily on the night of the murder. Going against the argument at Henderson's sentencing that sexual orientation played no part in the murder, McKinney's defence said that he was haunted by a past that put him into a rage, put him into a 5-minute emotional rage of chaos. This is how they were going to argue that McKinney did not deserve the death sentence. If the prosecution could prove malicious intent and premeditation, that was death sentence worthy. But if it was just a moment of passion-induced rage, they could even argue that this was manslaughter rather than murder. The defense portrayed Matt as a sexual predator from the outset, just a gay man intent on getting sex that night. Apparently, in the truck, Matt had reached over and grabbed Aaron's genitals and licked his ear, prompting McKinney to get very, very upset and beat him, apparently prompted by memories of sexual abuse he apparently suffered as a child. But Henderson and McKinney had invited Matt into their truck under the guise that they were gay too. They both admit this. McKinney's girlfriend herself testified that the men had pretended they were gay to lure Matt away from the bar. Basically, the lawyer attempted to put forward the gay panic defense, arguing that McKinney was temporarily driven to insanity by the alleged sexual advances. The gay panic defense is a legal strategy in which the defendant claims they acted out in a state of violent temporary insanity because of unwanted same-sex sexual advances. They find these advances so frightening that they react without thinking in self-defense, or they become temporarily insane. The idea of a gay person coming onto them is so terrifying that it could warrant murder. And this is still a legal defense, which blows my mind. There were a couple of bills put forward in 2018 to ban this gay panic defense at a national level, but both bills died pretty quickly. Although there are a few states that have banned the defense on a state level, shout out to California, Illinois, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Hawaii, Maine, Nevada, and New York. And there are a few more considering it, so baby steps. I just find it insane that this is a defense that can actually be used. I think about the amount of creepy guys who hit on me in clubs and bars against my will. Have I ever turned around and murdered one of them in a moment of panic? No. And don't get it wrong, I'm not referring to sexual abuse or anything as serious as that. Gay panic is used to demonstrate an LGBTQ person simply hitting on or coming onto someone, literally just talking to somebody. The gay panic defense is generally used in cases where the guilt is unquestioned, but the lawyers are reaching for a defense to lessen the charges, to show reduced culpability in a murder or assault. Luckily, in McKinney's case, the judge outright rejected this defense, saying that temporary insanity defense cannot be used in Wyoming. So their entire case was now based on showing that McKinney was less responsible because of all the drink and drugs. He admitted in court that he was the one who delivered most of the beating whilst Henderson hovered nearby. As the trial came to a close, the jury considered two kinds of first-degree murder: premeditated murder and felony murder. Premeditated murder requires intent to kill, whilst the felony murder only requires intent to commit the underlying felony, which in this case was robbery, which leads to an unintended murder. Both are considered first-degree murder and can carry sentences of life. McKinney was found guilty of both kidnap and felony murder. The jury did not believe the murder itself was premeditated, and then they begin to deliberate the death penalty.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words "Jesus saves" written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
But now the prosecution was stuck in a bind. It was looking realistic that McKinney would only get life, not the death penalty here, and they wanted him to get death. Although Wyoming has a death penalty, it's one of the states that's least likely to use it. And the prosecution didn't want any chance that McKinney could ever be released on parole. So a meeting is held between everyone, prosecution, defence and the Shepherds, to try and broker some kind of deal. The defence wanted to avoid the death penalty by any means, and the prosecution wanted to ensure that McKinney would never be freed. Two consecutive life terms with no appeals allowed and no possibility of parole is put on the table, something which pleased both the defence and the prosecution. But at the end of the day, it was up to the Shepherds to have the final say. Eventually, both Judy and Dennis agreed, and the death penalty is foregoed entirely. Dennis Shepherd stood up in court and addressed McKinney directly, saying, "I would like nothing better than to see you die, Mr. McKinney. However, this is the time to begin the healing process, to show mercy to someone who refused to show any mercy. Every time you wake up in your cell, remember you had the opportunity or the ability to stop your actions that night." He goes on to say that Matt disagreed with the death sentence in life and that he would disagree with it in death as well. So McKinney was going to have to live the rest of his life in prison and only have Matthew Shepard to thank for the fact that he was still alive. An incredibly poignant way to think about this case. The effect that Matt's death has had on America is astronomical, bigger than a lot of people would realise. In the immediate aftermath, people in Laramie, Wyoming just became a little bit kinder to the LGBTQ+ community. It became just a little bit less okay to spew hatred. People would stand up and say something against hate when they saw it, and people began to think twice about their words and actions. Just little things. In December 1998, Judy and Dennis set up the Matthew Shepard Foundation, something that Judy is still the main force behind to this day. The mission statement on the website states, "The Matthew Shepard Foundation empowers individuals to embrace human dignity and diversity through outreach, advocacy, and resource programs. We strive to replace hate with understanding, compassion, and acceptance." They work to erase hate across the USA. In the immediate aftermath of the murder, there were calls for new legislation to address hate crimes across the USA. Under existing Wyoming law and United States federal law, crimes committed on the basis of sexual orientation could not be prosecuted as hate crimes. Soon, a bill was introduced into Wyoming that defined attacks motivated by victim identity as hate crimes, but the measure failed in the Wyoming House of Representatives. It seems insane to me that anyone would vote against a bill that would introduce more protection for marginalised people, but the world is a concerning place and that is exactly what happened. President Bill Clinton attempted to extend federal hate crime legislation to include gay men and women and people with disabilities, but again, it ultimately failed and was stripped out in the conference committee. In 2007, the Matthew Shepard Act was introduced, but once again, it was dropped. Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, stated that she was committed to getting the Matthew Shepard Act passed, and she tried again to no avail in 2008. When Obama was elected to president, he stated that he was also committed to passing the act, and he did. On October 22nd, 2009, the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act was passed and signed into law. The measure expands the United States federal hate crime law to include crimes motivated by a victim's actual or perceived gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. It also removed, in cases of hate crime related to race or religion, the prerequisite that the victim be engaged in a federally protected activity. This bill being passed is a huge turning point in American history. It makes LGBTQ+ people feel just a little bit more protected walking down the street. Now, if they're assaulted due to their sexuality, the law protects them just a little bit more, and maybe it makes people think twice about their actions knowing that they could be prosecuted for it. On October 26, 2018, Matthew's ashes were finally laid to rest. Although a funeral was held in 1998 after his death, for over 20 years his parents had been afraid to choose a final resting place for their son. They feared that if they did, it would be at risk of desecration, people would destroy it. But finally, they found the safest place they possibly could. Matt was interred at the Washington National Cathedral, an Episcopal house of worship that is a fixture of American politics and religion. Matt was a part of the Episcopal Church in life, so it only made sense that he would also be a part of it in death. The service was presided over by Reverend Gene Robinson, the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church, who had been working closely with Judy Shepard for years on LGBT issues. When Judy asked him about the possibility of interring Matt's ashes at the cathedral, he said that he would make it happen. He said, "God can take something very, very bad and make something good come out of it. I think that's exactly what the Shepherds have done for all of us, taking this tragic, awful event and making something meaningful and productive out of it." Now, Matt's family has a safe place they can go and honour their son, but it's also open to the public. Anyone can go and pay their respects to Matthew Shepard. The work is far from over in reaching complete acceptance and equality. People are still being hurt and killed on a daily basis because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. The amount of violence committed against trans women alone is shocking. It seems like the fear is now more focused on trans people than gay men as it was 20 years ago. But we're getting there, slowly but surely. In Pride Month just last year, 2019, 50 trailblazers in the struggle for LGBTQ plus equality were honoured with the unveiling of a wall of honour inside New York's Stonewall Inn. The ceremony fell on the eve of the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. If you want to know more about Stonewall, my video will be linked on the screen now and in the description box down below. It's one of my favourite videos I've ever made, so I would recommend it. Matt features on this list alongside Marsha P. Johnson, Harvey Milk, and many, many more amazing LGBTQ plus people. But I'm just gonna end this video addressing some question over the attack on Matthew Shepard.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
A new book was released in 2013 which argued against the murder being a hate crime, saying instead it was purely because of drugs. The book claims that Matt was addicted to and dealing crystal meth and knew Aaron McKinney previously through the drug world. Therefore, this couldn't be a hate crime. They just wanted to break into Matt's house and steal his drugs. But this doesn't really fit with what came out in court, that McKinney said on multiple different occasions, including in letters to cellmates, that he attacked Matt because he was gay and he made a move on him. They lured him to their car by pretending they were gay. That's what they said themselves. But if it was all down to drugs, then Henderson and McKinney clearly thought it was less shameful and more justifiable in a way to kill somebody because of their sexual orientation than it would be for drugs. And that's a problem in itself. At the autopsy, it was found that Matt had small amounts of marijuana, alcohol, and possibly antidepressants in his system, but he had no methamphetamines, cocaine, or opioids in his system. Meth can be detected in someone's hair for up to 90 days after its last use, and Matt had no trace of it in his. That doesn't sound like somebody who apparently regularly did meth, according to this book. Even if it was drug-related, which seems unlikely when you consider everything, it doesn't change the fact that Matthew was a gay man, and his death has incited a huge amount of positive change across America, and inadvertently, across the world. The fact that McKinney even tried to use the gay panic defence at trial is offensive enough, and it's shocking that in some states it's still a legitimate defence. Matthew always fought for justice, always fought for equality, and he got what he wanted in a way. It's just sad that his life had to be taken in order for him to get there. There's still a long way to go. More than 8 out of 10 LGBTQ plus students report bullying and harassment at school. This still happens today, but with the introduction of things like the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Act, hopefully they will become fewer and further in between. We can all do our part to stand up to other people, to spread the word, to fight for equality and acceptance. If you see people saying negative things, doing negative things, then you have the ability to maybe change somebody's mind, to help with the fight towards equality. You don't have to be LGBTQ plus yourself. You can be an incredible ally, and I hope hearing stories like Matt's maybe makes you want to help make that change. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Mysteries and Histories. If you have a bit of time, I would love for you to go and leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast and spread the word. It would be much appreciated. I'll see you next week.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.